Sam Memphis, and welcome to Storyboard 30. This is the show taken right out of the pages of Storyboard Memphis, the nonprofit publication that brings you the arts, community, and culture in one place. And I am Mark Fleischer, publisher of Storyboard Memphis, and your host of Storyboard 30.
Venues are the place where the coming together and the art happens, but that doesn't just happen.
It wouldn't have happened were it not for those venues, for those people. These venues provide a laboratory for growth.
Those were the voices, first of Marvin Stockwell and then Steve Selvidge, from part one of our special edition about Memphis live music scene, talking about the critical importance of this truly organic ecosystem that makes our local scene function and thrive, and the current financial struggles of our venues due to the various pandemic shutdowns.
Everybody's kind of in a scurry right now. Like, it's hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait.
For part two, I followed up in February with Brian Skinny McCabe, owner of High Tone Cafe, about the status of his financial aid since Congress passed the $15 billion aid package, once known as Save Our Stages, now called the Shuttered Venue Operators Grant, or SVOG, back in December.
I've been hearing so many different things. It's like, okay, I'm waiting for the email to say, okay, go apply now. But that hasn't happened. And it's been, you know, a month and a week now since they passed the legislation for it all. So I don't know what's going on.
That was back at the beginning of February. And a month later, here in the first week of March, still no progress has been made. I also visited the Small Business Administration website this week, which only tells us that, quote, SBA is in the process of setting up the grant program and is not yet accepting applications, end quote. And they add that these applications are coming soon.
So anyway, going back and forth with them. So I'm talking to the lady. I went to go pick up the check. She tells me she's hearing that funds are not even going to be available or even able to apply for until around April. So, you know, I don't know how true that is or whatever. That's just another person, but that's a person in the government that knows more than I do about stuff.
Our recent conversations reminded me of something that Skinny said during our interview back in December about how difficult it's been on small business owners in general just to apply for these aid grants.
It's unbelievable. The two questions that should be asked from the government to a business owner: how long will you shut down for? Where should we send the check? That's what it should be. No, we're going through one right now. We're trying to get this surge grant through the state. And every single day, it's a new email. Now we need this information. Now we need this information.
As a small business owner, it could be easy to say, well, all the paperwork and headaches, that's what you signed up for. But these days, it isn't. None of us have signed up for this. For those in the Memphis music scene, however, what they have signed up for is an experience and an education they can't get anywhere else. Entertainment that we can't get anywhere else. I went back to my conversation with Memphis musician Steve Selvidge, and I asked him to take us back, way back, to his very first gig.
I am pretty sure it was either at the Antenna Club. I had a band called Uncensored, a hardcore band, and I was 13 years old. But I think the first gig was in Caroline Smallwood's backyard in Germantown. It was a hardcore show for her birthday. Mm-hmm. I remember this because my dad and his friends, known as Mudboy and the Neutrons, they were recording a record, and my dear friend Luther Dickinson, whose dad Jim grew up, played music with my dad, he was there at the studio when they were making this record. It was sort of like a live in the studio kind of thing. And Luther was like, "Where's Steve?" And my dad was like, "Oh, he has a gig." And, you know, Luther was like, "He has a gig? Like, he's playing a gig?" That was such was the egalitarian nature of the hardcore scene, you know, which is great. I very much cut my teeth, you know, from then on at the Antenna Club, for sure. Wow. So like 13 years old, probably.
Wow. As you matured into the scene.
Right.
And you look
I'm very mature.
As you look back,
How important was it for you that you had that venue, that outlet, that stage?
So important. I mean, from just a personal level, being able, I mean, I remember the feeling of being on stage. This, I mean, it's kind of a chasing the dragon sort of thing. Like those first, your first time or whatever, it's like, there was this for me anyway, this natural feeling of like being in the place I was supposed to be. And, you know, it was just that, like, it was so exhilarating and so, such a massive payoff, you know. I had a guitar in my hand. We were making music. There was a snare drum cracking a backbeat behind me. And it was just, and I've been literally chasing that feeling my entire life.
I asked Marvin Stockwell the same question about his very first gig and about his band Pez.
Pez is a punk rock band from Memphis, Tennessee, and we formed in 89, played our first show June 11th of 1990, we cut our teeth at the famed Antenna Club. When really there was really only one club to play big, loud, obnoxious punk rock music was the Antenna. Pretty soon after that, you know, places like Barristers popped up, the Map Room, Dent Cleaners, Tree of Woe, the People's Temple, all making manner of clubs and DIY spaces. But it was a lot of fun, and it all started in Memphis.
Talking to these guys about the clubs, taverns, bars, and cafes they played in, their memories are vivid, as though they could still envision the silhouettes of dancing heads against the lights of the back bar, or smell the sweat and the beer of the crowds. Back to Steve Selvidge. I wondered about his favorite, now long gone, places.
Antenna Club, for sure. I mean, that's just the generation that I am, you know. What I loved about the Antenna Club was that it was just a proper rock box. Like, there was a weird, like, this, I loved the venues in the city, but there was this weird, like, in terms of, like, your rock club, like, 300-seater, there was just this rash of stages in the corner. Like, what I loved about the Antenna Club, minus the, there was a giant pole in the middle of the dance floor, but it was just, you walk in, the bar's right here. Seats, dance floor, stage, you know, like that. It wasn't like, oh, we're sort of in the corner. I mean, you know, it was a dumpy, grubby club, you know, and I was so young when I was playing that, I can't even remember what the sound system was like. I didn't know enough about monitors or PAs like I do now. But yeah, so I missed the Antenna Club. Barristers was a great place. A lot of great shows there, and again they fostered a very cool scene. That was sort of that 90s indie rock thing, mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. It's like the Antenna Club sort of they barely made it into the 90s, but like, God, man, you know, we have a problem in Memphis where we're not even a secondary market. Memphis is tough, you know. We have great, like, there's so many great people, we do our things, but like, for a band coming from out of town, forget it, man, you know, it's tough. But in the 80s, the hardcore scene, all the bands came through the Antenna Club. Circle Jerks, Black Flag, Dag Nasty, you know, just everybody.
Steve's characterization of the great venues here in Memphis and our local talent brought to mind the joke I like to make, that I'm one of about three guys I know my age who doesn't know how to play the guitar. And it's not just that these guys know how to play, they play great. Guys who could hold their own around musicians in many of the bands in Austin or LA or Nashville. And what is that? Maybe some combination from The Mud and Cotton, or the myths and ghosts and dreams. Or what author and filmmaker Robert Gordon said in his seminal book It Came From Memphis about good old Southern oppression. The oppression, he said, neatly encapsulated here, the sort of environment where great art develops in obscurity, ideas like weeds that must force themselves through the concrete. And while there are plenty of organizations that cultivate or provide support to local talent, places like Stax Music Academy, Music Export Memphis, Memphis Slim House, the Consortium, the Memphis Music Initiative, and so many more, There is no organization that supports the very places that provide the stages for our local talent. I asked Steve about the concept of some kind of organization that supports our live music
scene. So the notion of whether it should be some sort of centralized body ordinance that organizes Memphis music for the benefit of venues and artists has been something that has been talked about for a long time. And there's a lot of opinions on it. My take is sort of that Memphis is slippery and it's a city based on contradictions, and great things have happened because of cultural collision and contradictions. And what makes it great is the fact that you go to a small venue that doesn't even have a stage and you see some of the most amazing people making some of the most amazing music. And I've been around a lot of places. I've seen a lot of people play. It's not just Memphis Pride, like, oh, you know, it's like, I've seen other, like, and I'm talking like little small smoky, well, not smoky anymore, but like, you know, little right. gigs. There's something special here. But once you try to define it, it slips through your fingers, you know. So while there are some financial and, you know, would be some kind of benefits, you know, like support for venues or, you know, a better wage or whatever else, I don't know. I'm not sure what we have to be sacrificed for that. And it just never works. It just never works. And Memphis just keeps on doing, being Memphis, you know? I mean, it's just like, you know, we're just rugged that way. And we just do our own thing, you know?
From an artist's perspective, no one wants constraints on creativity. After all, an absence of constraints is why so many gravitate to and take creative risks in Memphis in the first place. Nonetheless, since that discussion with Steve, I dug a little bit deeper into the idea of local support for venues. In 2020 and now even into 2021, we know that live venues everywhere have suffered. And in passing the first CARES Act relief package early last year, Congress neglected to provide relief targeted specifically in support of our live music venues. In response, some cities took action to lobby their local governments for parts of the Federal Discretionary Relief Fund, which was allocated to cities with populations over 500,000. And in Austin, their music venue owners took action partly as a response to the cancellation of their annual South by Southwest Music Festival and used their existing Music Venue Alliance platform to lobby the Austin City Council to set aside $2.4 million in grants for their live music venues. Venue owners in Houston were able to lobby the city for $3 million, in Nashville for $2 million, and in the Seattle area for $750,000. But it took coordinated efforts. And it's not the most comfortable discussion to have, but here in Memphis, without any established venue alliance, our independent venues were not able to lobby City Council for any of the remaining discretionary funds afforded to Memphis. Austin, Texas formed their venue alliance in 2016. Nashville's was formed in 2017. In the Seattle area, venue owners formed what is called the Washington Nightlife and Music Association by April 1st, in immediate response to the pandemic.
When we got to talking and it became apparent that other music cities in our country had the wherewithal to go get federal dollars to go to their venues to stabilize their music venue community. And then when I was told, and Memphis, you know, came up, you know, empty-handed, you know, that was disappointing to me because I know those venue owners and I know they're hurting. My heart really went out to Skinny because he had just opened up a new place. If anything, he dug down deep to make the high tone even better. And then right on the heels of that come the pandemic. Just the worst timing in the world. And knowing Skinny personally, and knowing how much he cares, that my heart just sank when I thought about all that. But if you recast this and say, what is the opportunity What is a best practice in another city that is working for another city? I mean, I think this obviously lays bare the need for one of those, or at least some mechanism within our entrepreneurial ecosystem or our chamber, we have several different organizations that have a little bit of a toehold into all of this. And you could say, why didn't any one of a number of them put this on their to-do list and get it done? You know, I don't know. I don't know their pressures. And so I don't know the answer to that. Yeah. But I do know that Memphis isn't just one of many music cities in America. Memphis is the fertile crescent of 20th century American culture. I'm showing myself to be the Memphis homer that I am. But like, this is Memphis. This is where rock and roll began. This is where gritty, urgent soul music at Stax happened. That is still echoing and reverberating through the music that's being produced today. And we are still producing urgent, amazing music of all stripes in Memphis. So, to see some like I don't begrudge Seattle their $750,000, but and hey, it was like. That 90s thing, you know, Nirvana, Mudhoney, that was awesome. I love it. Sub Pop, it's cool. But stack that against Memphis? Memphis, we're Memphis, right? That's
What both Marvin and Steve are talking about is a question that I pose based on my own ignorance of how the music industry works. And that's this. Is Memphis an industry town? And by industry, all we have to think about are the New Yorks, the LAs and the Nashvilles of the music landscape. Artists move to these places to seek out career management, to look for an agent, to sign a record deal, to be, as they say, discovered. And so when I've asked local experts, is Memphis an industry town? The answer has been decidedly no. No and no, not by a long shot. That's part of what makes Memphis a secondary market, but also a big part of what makes Memphis so special.
A piece of that is the wonderful maverick energy of Memphis that allowed a 19-year-old truck driver to walk into Sun Studios and reinvent music. You know, like, part of that DNA is what is part of the alchemical, ridiculous magic that people go, that they don't even know how to put their finger on it, but they're like, oh my God, I'm in Memphis. Part of that is the fact that we like to keep our options open, and there are brilliant, brilliant, brilliant people doing amazing stuff that are, because Memphis is cheap to live in, they're more than content to kind of be this kind of almost B-movie figure, kind of like lifestyle on the fringe and just kind of doing my thing. And they're fine with like being bigger in Europe and being like, who gives a crap about this person? I'm sitting next to him and other ones, who cares? You know, like, nobody cares. And that's part of what's endearing, but it's also part of what works against Memphis, is that we fear that music officialdom is bullshit for the man. The same thing that's like, oh, I found this amazing thing where we don't have to worry about all this crap and we can just go off to the races. The truth is, these systems were designed for real reasons. You know, if you have management, and I guess, you know, Pez did just enough of the legitimate, like, we got signed to an LA-based independent label. We signed a record contract. We recorded at studios. Like, we recorded at West Beach Recorders out in Hollywood with Steve Kravac, where they recorded The Wall, you know? So we went up to Chicago and we recorded with Steve Albini because we had a label and a budget to go pay Steve Albini. But so most of my foot is in this world, but one little tiny pinky toe, I'd say Pez experienced just enough of the kind of officialdom and having a booking agent, you know, having, you know, like all those checks and balances where booking agents work among themselves to get you on better tours and grow you as an artist. Both, neither side here of the equation is necessarily bad, but there is an overarching distrust with the lion's share of Memphis musicians that thing over there can ever be really worth much. They'd rather just stay over here and do it with their own tools than trust officialdom. You know, and there are a few crossover people, especially the people who want to like really make it, make a run of it, they have to know everybody and they have to participate in all parts of the ecosystem to string it together, you know, and make it, make enough of it work. But there are definitely people who just like don't want to have anything to do with that.
Okay, so Memphis is decidedly not an industry town, nor does it want to be. As Marvin said, it's what allowed Howlin' Wolf, Elvis Presley, and Johnny Cash to walk into a Sun Records off the street and pay a few bucks to lay down a few tracks and record history. So while wrapping my head around this organic, independent, and creative ecosystem, I was reminded how its very independence is what allows this river town to be so creative. And if you know anything about Memphis, that shouldn't be any big secret. It's what allows those cultural collisions to happen in the first place. But like the analogy we used earlier, where our scene is a bit like a coral reef, is it an ecosystem that needs to be left alone to do its thing? Or are there too many other forces at work in today's world that are threatening it? Because if the pandemic has taught us anything, it's that while being independent is great for our creative culture, some kind of in-this-together support is still necessary for survival.
Even a coral reef, if something's being polluted or if there are outside forces that threaten it, you have to protect it, right? I get the analogy of leave it alone and let it find its way, but I do think that like taking action to maintain the health of the ecosystem, in this case, the Memphis music scene, is also, it's absolutely worth considering and finding a way to succeed in doing. You look at something that's really, I think, is so earnest and so organic and much lower cost, and that's Music Export Memphis. You know, like Elizabeth has figured out a way to deputize the Memphis music scene and send them out. She's doing a lot of the same training pieces, and actually Elizabeth cut her teeth at the Memphis Music Foundation's Resource Center. She worked under Cam Mann. So she saw what the musicians needed, but then she's like, how to basically train them up, but then also incentivize that they, and so that they can be out there as ambassadors for Memphis music. And you know, there was a tour support thing that the Memphis Music Foundation thing had. She's incorporated a little bit of that, and I wouldn't be the best person to talk about the specifics of her program, but I do know that she's found a much more modular way to go about it and succeed at it. So, you know, Memphis is evolving, and that entrepreneurial spirit is finding new solutions. So just because it was this way doesn't mean it has to persist.
I couldn't help but to revisit the idea of some kind of music venue alliance, some entity where venue owners could share ideas, gather resources, and lobby for support on behalf of themselves and behalf of each other. Not to put any controls on how music is produced, but in supporting the places where it thrives, the bars, the taverns, the clubs, and so on. So I asked Skinny at Hightone about his thoughts on it.
Yeah, I think so. And I'd totally be a part of it. We've got a lot of really strong personalities in the venue world in Memphis. I try to get along with everybody, but that's not always possible. Right now, more than ever, we have been talking back and forth between a lot of people. I like the idea of an alliance, stuff like that, but I'm also a natural-born pessimist. My grandmother taught me growing up, you know, if you expect the worst out of everything, you'll never be let down. I don't know why I'm that way. I do know why I'm that. I just said why I'm that way. But, you know, it'd be cool if everybody could put their egos aside and come together. But we could do that all day long. It doesn't mean the city's going to give it a hoot, you know, for lack of a better term there. Yeah. We could totally do that.
March 1st, this week, I followed up on the status of venue relief funding. And I pulled up an article by Jeremy Fuster of the Entertainment Insider publication Rap Pro. Jeremy wrote that lobbyists for the entertainment industry cheered a $15 billion bailout for music venues and other independent entertainment outlets closed by the pandemic, which Congress passed in late December and that became law in January. But relief has turned to frustration, as not a single penny from the Save Our Stages Act has been sent out yet. And Audrey Schaefer of the National Independent Venue Association said, "We honestly don't know how much longer we're going to have to wait. Thousands of live venues need the money fast, and for many others, it's now too late."
Anybody that hears this, man, continue to shop local, man. Keep it as local as possible, man, because these mom and pop people, myself included, you know, not just me, but everybody and anybody, they're doing all that they can with absolutely minimal help from the government. And everybody's had to adapt in different ways as far as, I mean, you know, you and I both know Hightone has never been a sit down restaurant. You know what? We're having to do what we have to do to maintain. So there is a Hightone down the road.
Sitting on the Hightone stage, I asked Skinny the most obvious of questions. "This is Memphis," I said. "Just how important is live music to Memphis?"
"Very. This is home of the blues, birthplace of rock and roll. I mean, and then everything that comes in with that, you know, it's extremely important. I mean, our industry is real. It's real. There are people that make this happen. It takes a lot of people to make this happen. Now you can still do your digital formats and stuff like that, but there's no feeling than being at a concert. There's no other feeling like that. Seeing a band that you've never seen before and they just blow the headliner away, you know, that feeling right there, that's something that you'll never forget as long as you live. We hear people talk about it all the time. Yeah, I saw AC/DC at the Pyramid. You know, they still talk about, they'll talk about that before they talk about anything else in life. There's nothing more harnessable, more magical than that feeling right there, live music. It's extremely important, and we have to protect it. I don't know how we go about that. I just hope we get back to it.
Keep creating in the meanwhile. Find a new genre of music, you know, that way when we do open back up, there'll be something really cool to get back after. Keep creating, keep writing songs, keep playing. Don't let it go by the wayside. You know, pick that guitar up, whatever, write whatever down. Do some artwork and stuff. Hit me up when we get back around to being back open and we'll do a show. You know, I mean, this can't last forever.
Amen to that. Amen to that. Yeah. You've been listening to another special edition of Storyboard 30 from Storyboard Memphis and WYPL. And this has been your host, Mark Fleischer. A very special thank you goes to Cole Early of Pale Moon Media for his audio and visual work on this special podcast. Thanks, as always, to WYPL and the Memphis Public Libraries, to producer Vance Durbin, and to broadcast manager Tommy Warren, and to you listeners of WYPL and Storyboard 30 podcast. We hope you join us next time on Storyboard 30 for more conversation with those Memphis personalities and shapers who make our lives here in the Bluff City just a little bit better. Memphis, make it a great week and continue to stay safe out there.